history through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, brought to you by Paul Everett's RV Country, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are heroes around you. There are stories that need to be told, and sometimes all it takes is for someone to ask a few questions and take the time to listen, and that's what we're going to do today in Madera, California. And we want to make sure that our veterans know that we appreciate their service and sacrifice, that we're not going to forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And as we take that journey, we learn a lot, we're educated, we're entertained, often inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. And Madera, California is where Martin Madellan has lived for, well, more than 80 years. And he's only 90 years old, so do the math. Pretty young boy when he came here. Did have a little trip to Europe about 70 years ago that almost claimed his life, but didn't. And we're very thankful for that. He's a recipient of the Silver Star, the Bronze Star, the Purple Heart. Didn't get those all during World War II. There's a story there. And he's also a guy that I've been trying to catch up with for a long time. Martin, I know that I've seen you in a lot of places because you've been so active in VFW post 1981 here. You've been a member since 1947. And I know it's not easy for you to talk about what you did during the war. So first of all, thank you for being willing to sit down and share this today. I'm real eager to hear your story. I want to hear about before you came to Madera, though. You're a Lone Star guy. You grew up in Texas?
Yes,
With a pretty big family.
Big family.
How many brothers you have?
Six boys and two girls.
And five of you six boys were in the military?
Five of us, yes.
Who got that started?
My older brother, Jess. Jesse was in the Pacific in Japan, and he was an engineer. And then my second brother, Gilbert, he was a medic in World War II.
Mm-hmm.
And he used to go and pick up soldiers and bring them home and wounded ones and dead ones and all that. So then it was me who joined in San Francisco. Then my younger brother, Larry, he went to Korea. And my younger brother, Victor, he's in Navy. He's the only Navy man. The other ones were in the Army.
Mm-hmm.
Four in the Army and one in the Navy.
Poor Victor. He is outnumbered. He can never win that argument, can he?
No, he couldn't. Yeah.
So before you moved out here to California, though, as a young boy in Texas, you remember anything about those years?
Well, I remember that we used to be out in the ranch, and my dad was a half owner of the ranch, ran the ranch.
Uh-huh, like a foreman or something?
Yeah, and I used to ride a lot of horses. I used to love to ride the horse. I used to go out and get them out in the field and ride them, and that's what I can remember the most, you know.
What was it that brought your family out here?
Some lady that lived over there close by, her mother lived here in Madera, and she used to tell them that it was just when gold was going on and a lot of work and stuff. And so my dad decided to come and check, and him and one of my older brother, they came on the train, came into Madera, and he went into a ranch, Potros Ranch, in 18 and a half. He got started there, and then he took over running the ranch for Potros. And nothing but cotton and grapes. And then he sent for us. So my older brother Tom, he drove the car in a trailer coming all the way from Dallas. Well, actually, it was 20 miles the other side of Dallas at Kaufman.
Mm.
Kaufman, Texas. And used to be in the ranch out there. So he drove us all the way down to Madera. And we settled here then in 1935.
So you're not even 10 years old yet, but your world just changed a lot. You come all the way out here. It must have been a new world for you here.
Oh, it was. I started school, and I went to the old Howard School in Madera. And it used to be one big room for all the grades, and then they built another new home. And now they got three Howard schools.
But when you started, it was a one-room school.
One-room school.
Uh-huh. So you had all your siblings in the same room with you?
Yeah.
You couldn't get away with anything,
no,
could you?
No, you couldn't. Yeah.
And you mentioned that ranch where your dad was working was growing grapes and cotton. Does that mean you were out there picking cotton?
We picked cotton,
mm-hmm,
and grapes. And that's what made me go to San Francisco. My cousin Johnny and I, we decided we wasn't going to be picking grapes and cotton. So we left My dad gave me a little money, so we went to San Francisco, and we got in there in San Francisco, and then we went to welding school. We passed, then we started working welding in shipyard.
And how old were you at the time?
15, 16. We got a certified welding certificate. We could weld anything in a ship.
You're at the Kaiser shipyards there?
Right.
Building all those Liberty ships?
Yeah. That was in Richmond and ships. And then from there, we moved into South San Francisco at the shipyard there. From there, my cousin Johnny left. He went into the Navy. Then they called me, and I could have gotten a deferment and stayed because I was a certified welder. They called me in the office, and they told me that they could keep me. I didn't have to go. So I said, well, everybody's going, so I'll go.
Mm-hmm.
So I left. So then from there, they took me into Camp Roberts in the Army right there by
Paso Robles.
Paso Robles.
Let me ask you a couple questions about that. So clearly you're part of the war effort before you're ever in the military, but the thing I didn't ask you, because we jumped ahead to you leaving town and getting out of the cotton fields and quitting school and becoming a welder, but somewhere in there, the world changed because America was attacked. Do you remember December 7th, 1941?
I remember in December 7th when they were attacked. Right then, I had this right there. This, you say San Francisco?
You got a tattoo on your right forearm.
Yeah. And I put it in December 7, 1941.
Uh-huh. That's when you got that tattoo?
Yeah.
So you were getting that before you heard about the attack, or as a response to the attack?
In response to the attack. When I went in, they asked me what the Navy, Army, or Marines, and so I took the Army. When I went to Camp Roberts, took my 17-week training, I signed up for the paratroopers. And they asked anybody want to sign up for a paratrooper, so I did sign up for a paratrooper, and they never did call me. They left me there. All my outfit left, and I stayed there. Then I wonder what was going on. So they start bringing in some new recruits, so I even started training them also as a private. Then later on, I got my orders. They shipped me into Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri to join the 70th.
70th Infantry Division.
70th Infantry. They were making up the division to send them over. So when I was there, they finished the division, and then from there, they shipped us to Boston, got the ship, and went into across the ocean. That's when Hitler was really going strong. It had to be stopped, so my outfit was one of the 70s that was there. And from there, it went into war. I know that we used to travel at night on boxcars.
40 and 8.
Yeah, we didn't have the helicopters or nothing like they did now. But when they dropped us off there in Philippsburg, France, I was just a private, so all I did take orders. So we unloaded off, and somebody told the captain where to go. So we got out and caught them on each side of the road, walking at night. And we walk, and come to find out, I guess he found out later on that we were in back of enemy lines. And we started to come back again through the woods, not by the road. When going back, the company got pinned down with machine guns on top of the ridge there, so we all lay down. Then I was a BAR man, so I had a big weapon. The Sergeant Peterson came up to me and said, "Medellin, will you come with me?" Okay, so him and I crawled up to the top of the hill, and where they couldn't see us no more. So then from there, we went on top of the hill to the side of the barn where there's two machine guns there, and they had the company pinned down. So the Sergeant said, "You cover me while I advance to the barn. And when I get close down, I'll motion you to come down." So, yeah, okay. Okay, Sarge. So he took off, and I stayed kneeling behind the tree and just looking. So pretty soon, I got shot. I got left side, bullet went in, and burned my arms up, and knocked me down. All the clothes, had a lot. It was winter time, so it was cold. So we had a lot of clothes. But he knocked me down, and I just hollered. I said, "Pete, I'm hit." So he came back and saw me laying down, so he turned me over and saw my clothes all torn, and he wondered what was wrong, so he turned me over and then cut the rest of my clothes, and come to find out that I had scratch where the bullet went in, and he said, "Well," he said, "that bullet didn't have your name," he said, "it had your initial."
Because it came across your shoulder and your neck.
Yeah.
So it grazed
my
neck.
Yeah.
But didn't get your jugular.
No.
And it was probably less than an inch away from your jugular, I'm guessing.
Right.
So it definitely had your initials.
The pure medic took care of me there, and it was never reported. So then from then on, we motioned the company. We went down there and we mowed him down. After he picked me up, we went down there and he had a machine gun and I had the BAR, so there was about 10, 12 guys in there. We mowed him down. Then he said, okay, we motioned the company. It was all clear. So then they got up, they went into town. Well, Sergeant Peterson went in with them and another sergeant took me and the rest of the platoon the other way. So Sergeant Peterson, that's all I knew him by, Sergeant Peterson, because he was the first sergeant. And he has to be reduced to a tech sergeant so he can lead the troops.
Mm.
He was the first sergeant. He never did have to be there. But anyway, he was a great man. And he got killed right away. And he was the only one that knew that I had been shot.
Right.
And never was reported. See? So anyway, I got the Silver Star for that, but he died. He was a brave man. That's all I can remember about that. But he got killed right away, right after that.
Well, I've got a few questions for you. I want to make sure I understand correctly. This is the very first taste of combat you've ever had? I mean, this is within a day or two of you getting there?
Yeah, right.
You talked about you guys walked, and you probably walked over. They moved you on trains, and then you're marching. But this is the first engagement you've had with the enemy, is the one that earned you the Silver Star.
That's right.
So they've got a machine gun on the high ground, so your guys can't advance, right?
Right.
So everybody is hunkered down, trying not to get shot.
Right.
So what made you two guys do something about it?
Sergeant Peterson went and got me because he knew I had the BAR, and he wanted some power.
Mm-hmm.
So the BAR is a big weapon, and he had a machine gun, a burp gun. So he wanted to go get him so the company could advance. So he was the one that, like I said, made those orders, you know.
Well, what were you thinking, though? I mean, you're a 19-year-old kid who didn't even have to go. You could have stayed there welding ships, and you said, no, I want to go. And now you get there.
I wanted to go. Well, I was 18 then.
Just 18, okay.
Yeah. The kid there asked me what was my main training. I said, well, I hate to tell him. I said, well, it's either kill or be killed. That's what it is. I hate to say that, but that's what it is. During the war.
And there was no practice round. This was the real deal.
Did a real deal.
So you guys are heading up there trying to get in position to take them out.
Right.
And you get hit.
Yeah.
Were you in pain?
No, I really wasn't in pain. It was just scared, you know.
Uh-huh.
Like anybody that tells you wasn't scared, they lie because you know you're scared, you know.
So you're 18 years old. Your whole company is pinned down. You're trying to do something about it. You get shot. But you're still going up toward this position, and then your BAR and Peterson's machine gun are able to take out that machine gun nest.
Yeah, there was two machine guns down in the barn. They were in the barn.
Uh-huh.
And there was two of them in there, two machine guns, and then about 10, 12 guys in there. I guess they were there when we passed by there at night. You know, we went through the road.
Mm-hmm. So you didn't know you're passing them by.
We didn't know we were passing them by, no.
But so now, because the two of you were able to take them out, your company could advance. If you guys hadn't done that, it would have cost some American lives.
It could have.
Maybe quite a few.
Yeah.
Did you realize that at the time?
Well, not at the time, but I do now, you know. But it could have. They could have gotten quite a few.
So welcome to the war, teenager.
Yeah. It was something. It was quite an experience, but it had to be done.
Well, we're thankful you got it done and that you lived to tell us the story. It's time for our first break. If you'd like to find a couple photos and even a short video with this week's guest, Martin Medellin, go to hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes page on Facebook, and we'll be right back after this. You hear a lot about World War II if you listen to Hometown Heroes, but have you ever wondered what it's like to be on a real World War II ship? The SS Jeremiah O'Brien, one of just two remaining operable Liberty ships, is docked at Pier 45 in San Francisco's famous Fisherman's Wharf. And the O'Brien is offering overnight programs on Fridays and Saturdays for kids ages 6 and up. Kids get to sleep on the ship in World War II bunks, have a private tour of the ship's galley, the crew quarters, guns and gun mounts, exhibits, and the crown jewel, the O'Brien's triple expansion steam engine. This is an experience like no other. For more details, call the SS Jeremiah O'Brien's office at 415-544-0100. That's 415-544-0100. or visit the ship's website at ssjeremiahobryan.org.